Following last week's homily, the liturgy last week presented us with the challenge to forgive those who have sinned against us. And how do we admonish them and how we reach out to them? Today, the Holy Liturgy follows the theme on anger and resentment and the importance of forgiving. Forgive your neighbor's injustice, the first reading says. Wrath and anger are hateful things, yet the sinner hugs them tight. And instead of reflecting on the importance of forgiveness, the importance of letting go of anger, today, following the theme in the gospel, I'd like to focus more on what seems to be the root of anger in our times. One of the roots, at least, and that is politics. Now, it is said that the Word of God is meant to comfort the afflicted, but also discomfort the comfortable. So mind you, everything that I'm about to say is not my personal view, but it is official church teaching. And it forms a part of the body of documents of social justice that the church has been preaching for hundreds of years, literally. The church shouldn't be political. We've heard this phrase. And to a certain point, there's truth to that. If we see being political as choosing one party and promoting one party, one candidate over the others, then in that sense, no. The church has no interest in being political. But if we see being political as taking interest in the policies that parties push forward, and the ideologies that move them, that drive them, then the church is deeply political in standing for the gospel of her founder, especially when it comes to oppression and suppression of human dignity. In this sense, the church is political. So we can say the church is not interested in politics, but is deeply interested in policies. And in the upcoming weeks, we as Catholic Christians will have the grave moral responsibility of exercising our vote in conscience. And I'd like to offer some words of reflection on what this could look like, how this could guide our prayer and our discernment. Sometimes I think if I was born in early century Germany, who and how would I have voted for? Remember that all the great dictatorships of the last century arrived to power by ways of democracy. They were voted into power. And so I wonder, would I have voted for this dictator? Or would I have picked up on these subtle cues? Maybe if I was living in Germany at the beginning of the century, overcoming this great financial depression, maybe I would have listened to this man who spoke with strength and decision, who gave me this future that's solid and prosperous for me and my family. Maybe I would have voted for him. And then I ask myself, what if when the party amended its platform and pushed its ideology a little further, would I have continued to vote then? Maybe so. If they're giving fruits, if the economy's responding, if I'm seeing progress, yeah. What if it goes against my conscience? I don't know. What if next year or 2 years after that, the party pushed their ideology a little forward, preaching hatred against one group, or preaching an ideology that just didn't settle with my conscience? In other words, when would that point have arrived for me in conscience? To say, this is something I can't put up with anymore. There is no one candidate, there is no one political party that completely aligns with church teaching in every sense. And even if there were, the church would have no interest in officially backing up one candidate over another. The church, like I said, has interest not in candidates, but in policies. A candidate can present himself as a saintly, holy option, but the church will still ask, what policies do you promote? How do you see human dignity? And so I'd like to offer some reflections on some ideologies that are going around in our country, in our times, in our world. Many of you have experienced the rise and fall of communism, present even today in countries like Cuba, Venezuela, China. Marxist socialism started up with good ideals to eradicate poverty, to eliminate any form of social division, social oppression. Good goals, we could say. Yes. But the church condemned Marxist socialism on many grounds, on how it sought to implement that freedom in their eyes. One of the ways they sought to do it was complete uniformity. Eliminate all those things that divide the people. Religion divides the people, eliminate religion. Social class divides people, eliminate social classes. And you're left with uniformity. And the way they did that was eradicating some basic human rights. There's no freedom of religion. There's but one religion, the state. There's no private property or private enterprise. The state has authority and dictate and the monopoly of that as well. There's no freedom of expression because opinions divide the people. And little by little, the state accomplished that, turning itself, turning the state into God. And that God demanded worship. That God demanded compliance. Nowadays, there is a form of Marxist socialism brewing. But it's not the state that is being turned into God. It's the individual himself. And if that God, that individual, sees that a human life brewing inside him goes against that God's decisions, that God's plans, well, that life should be sacrificed for the sake of this individual's freedom. The church cannot be idle in front of ideologies that deny a human being the right to life. And if a political party amends its platform to expand abortion even to the day of birth without even allowing dissension within the party, then the Catholic Christian has the grave responsibility of re-examining his conscience and his affiliation to that party. Life is sacred, and we cannot allow that human right to be watered down, diluted. Not even for the sake of a false compassion or euthanasia for the elderly. The church condemns Marxist socialism on these grounds. However, the church also condemns a very liberal, unbridled capitalism with as much force as it condemns this Marxist socialism. Father, what could the church possibly condemn about capitalism? At least in the liberal sense. There's prosperity. There's technological advancements in medicine, communication, infrastructure. In agriculture, our fields are more productive. In developing genetics, there's more food. The church condemns liberal capitalism on different grounds than it condemns Marxist socialism. But it does speak against this unbridled capitalism. These are the words of Pope Pius XI, almost 100 years ago. Capitalism itself is not to be condemned, and surely it is not vicious of its very nature, but it has been vitiated by the international imperialism of money. Now, it's not the individual, that's God, it's money. Financial systems, corporations. And so the church condemns capitalism on these grounds. These are the words of St. John Paul II, the same pope who fought against the abuses of communism, these human rights, speaking on liberal capitalism. The Marxist solution has failed, he says. But the realities of marginalization and exploitation remain in the world, especially in the third world. As does the reality of human alienation, especially in the more advanced countries. How true that is. We can be financially prosperous, as many third world countries are not, but there is a spiritual void. There's a moral poverty in our advanced countries that doesn't seem to be there, at least as strongly, in third world countries. Against these phenomena, he continues, the church strongly raises her voice. Vast multitudes are still living in conditions of great material and moral poverty. The collapse of the communist system in so many countries certainly removes an obstacle to facing these problems, but it is not enough to bring about their solution. Indeed, there is a risk that a radical capitalistic ideology could spread which refuses even to consider these problems, in the belief that any attempt to solve them is futile. And those problems should be blindly entrusted to the development of market forces. May the free market take care of these countries. May hard work bring them out of poverty. We only need to see the mortgage crisis of 2008 to realize that unbridled capitalism succumbs to the selfishness of human nature, and how many people lost their livelihood, their jobs, because of the selfishness of a few. You know, I was looking at the financial status since the pandemic started. 40 million have lost their jobs. That is, in our country. 40 million Americans have lost their jobs. And I started wondering, well, what about the richer Americans, that 1%? And I found that the 1% actually got 30% richer. Now, indeed, that's because of advancements in their companies, and their companies got like 50% more valuable in this time. But 30% richer over the course of 6 months, that's a big leap when you have 40 million unemployed. What is going on? It's not capitalism, the church says, but a very radical form of capitalism, this liberal form that is taking root. Our national debt has reached astronomical proportions. And in a way, we are mortgaging the future of our kids and more generations to come. Great corporations are lobbying with governments and marking the future of how countries develop, not because they care of human dignity and human flourishing, but because they care of bottom lines. They care for profit alone. That is the nature of businesses. Many people are being deported and families are being divided for the sake of serving this god of finance, this god of money, and natural resources are being abused and depleted. Also in this sense of liberal capitalism, the church cannot stay idle when it sees that the value of the human being is not dictated by its dignity, but by its productivity. What productivity, what capacity to serve this god of finance do our elderly have? Our physically or mentally sick brothers and sisters, the poor, the oppressed. The church stands on the ground of human freedom given to us by God. Well, so in light of these ideologies, who do we vote for? How do we exercise this grave responsibility? Well, my invitation is first to study the platforms, study the policies, and to recognize that some rights are more fundamental than others. In other words, I cannot compare the right to flee from an oppressive government, the right to migrate, with the right to be born. Or I can't compare the right or the freedom of work with with the freedom of religion. There are some rights more fundamental than others. So in these upcoming weeks, as you and I are challenged to exercise our vote, it will be a struggle. If we do it right, it always is a struggle. Because there's no candidate or party that aligns completely to Christian teaching. But our way to go about it as Christians is with the gospel of Christ on one hand and the newspaper on the other. We vote in conscience, but not only that, we vote according to an informed conscience. We try to do our homework, our research, and we vote as best we can. But it's all done in the context of prayer, of taking responsibility of the love we have for our country, the love we have for the gospel of Christ, the love we have for human dignity, and we decide accordingly. May Mary, the seed of wisdom, guide our discernment and our reflection as in these upcoming weeks we discern our vote. Sacred Heart of Jesus, I trust you.